Okay, good morning, church. Let's turn our Bibles. I better turn this on. It is on. I'll be. It kind of reminds me of the story. You see M.R. Wings? I ain't got time to tell you about it, but anyway. Well, Matthew 4:16, I've entitled this lesson, Walking in Light of the Knowledge of the Lord. Walking in Light of Knowledge. Matthew 4:16. The people who were sitting in darkness saw a great light, and those who were sitting in the land in the shadow of death, upon them a light has dawned. If we look in 1 Corinthians 15:19, if we have hope in Christ in this life only, we are of all men most to be pitied. As Christians, what is our perspective about the world? What should our perspective about the world be? You know, many people today suffer from an affliction called panphobia. Panphobia is the fear of everything. And it's an apprehension that something bad is going to happen. And there seems to be a lot of that going on today. But there's a reliable estimate that was put out that things that people worry about, only 8% are legitimate worries. 8%. That means 92% of the things that people worry about that is costing them their peace and destroying their lives for nothing. Let's look at Matthew chapter 6 and see what Jesus says about this. Matthew chapter 6 and verse 27. He says, "And who of you, by being worried, can add a single hour to his life?" Verse 34, he says, "So do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will care for itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own." So you know, happiness then is an inside job. As a man thinks, so is he. It's really our choice. But sometimes we have to change our stinking thinking. There's a time for everything under the sun. Time and chance happen to us all. Sometimes tragedies happen. And then it's a proper time for mourning and for mourning with those who mourn. There is a time for that. But what I'm talking about is an average day when we're surrounded by blessings that we begin to take for granted and spend the day worrying about tomorrow. Daniel, Zechariah, Revelations, seems like all the visions in the scriptures have the same message. We win, we win, we win. We need to walk in the light of that knowledge. We look at life more abundantly. Let's look at John chapter 10. Jesus spoke about life more abundantly. John 10 and verse 10. He says, "The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it more abundantly." Life more abundantly reaches all the way to the third heaven. However, it begins here. The life more abundantly begins as we become Christians, but it reaches all the way to the third heaven for its fulfillment. Look in John 16 in verse 33. John 16, 33. Jesus says, "These things I have spoken to you, so that in me you may have peace. In the world you have tribulation, but take good courage. I have overcome the world. He came, he said, so that we can have peace. He acknowledges we're going to have trouble in the world. If you look in John 14, but he says that he's overcome the world. Did Jesus have any trouble in the world? Sure did. But he said, I overcame the world. Chapter 14, the first three verses of John says, do not let your heart be troubled. Believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many dwelling places. If it were not so, I would have told you. For I go to prepare a place for you. If I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also. Seems like Jesus is pointing us to come to understand that this abundant life he's talking about is going to be totally fulfilled, not here, but in another place. And he wants us to know that God has prepared mansions to that end. And so we need to walk in that light. As trouble is all around us, instead of worrying about it, fretting about it, losing your peace over it, know that Jesus says he has prepared mansions for us. And if it weren't true, he would have told us. So walk in the knowledge of that light. And pertaining to our lives here now, Jesus taught the principle law of the universe operates in the law of cause and effect. There's many things we can learn from the scriptures, not just things about going to heaven, but things pertaining to this life as well. And he says the principle law by which the universe operates, the way God set it up, is on the law of cause and effect. In the parable of the sower, the seed sown was the cause. But in this situation, the effect depended upon the soil or the heart condition. In concerning forgiveness and judgment, Jesus talked about in Matthew 6, he says that unless we forgive people their sins, our sins will not be forgiven. So he's teaching that our actions have consequences. Once again, it's the same law of cause and effect. In Genesis 1:11, God said, let every seed bring forth after its own kind. And all nature teaches us that is true. Everywhere you look, all seed brings forth after its own kind. In Galatians 6:7, Paul makes this universal law known when he says that God is not mocked, but whatsoever a man sows, he will reap. If you sow to the flesh, you're going to reap of the flesh. If you sow to the Spirit, you will reap of the Spirit. But the law is universal. It's in place. What a man sows, he will reap. For every action, there is an equal and an opposite reaction. As you sow, you reap. What you put out will determine what you must get back. It's the law. It's so simple, it's so basic, but it's so true in every aspect of life, and yet it's so misunderstood by people or overlooked. This is the universal law of the boomerang effect. Everybody know what a boomerang is? All right? How far the boomerang will travel, no one can tell. How great or small a circle, only time will tell. But it will eventually, inevitably, come around full circle. It's the law. So if you take stock of your present situation in life, and you've got to realize that it's nothing more or less than the result of your past sowing. What you have sowed is what you are now reaping. If you're not satisfied with it, you got to keep sowing. Remember that everything in the entire universe operates according to the law of cause and effect. There are no exceptions. Nothing happens by accident, not even accidents. For every result, there is a cause. Take care of the cause, and the effect will always, without exception, take care of itself. Good cause, good effect. Bad cause, bad effect. No cause, no effect. It's that simple. So let's turn the page in our thinking and consider for a moment. You don't want to, I've got a set of scales here in my hands, balancing things out. You don't want to look at the wrong end of the scale, but you want to look at who are you serving. Let me explain what I mean. Two scales away, one represents reaping and one represents sowing. Two scales. If you're concentrating on what you're going to reap, thinking about what am I going to reap, what do I need, you're concentrating and you're looking at the wrong scale. You want to look at the other end. Concern yourself only with increasing your service to others, and the scales will balance themselves. You see, because what you're sowing over here will determine what you're reaping over here. Don't just think about what you want to reap. You've got to first think about what you're going to sow to reap. This is true in every aspect of life. Don't be like the person sitting in front of the empty fireplace and say, "Give me heat." It doesn't work that way. You're asking for the impossible. Pile in the wood first, and then you will get the heat as a result. You see, you must first sow before you can reap. It's true in everything. Whatever you seek in the forms of rewards or reaping, you must first earn from service to others. All attempts to set aside this law will end in failure and frustration. Jesus said in Matthew 23:11, that the greatest among you will be your servant. You know, it's not just the greatest in heart he's talking about, but he's talking about, look at people who are successful, what we would consider successful in life. If you study the situation, how they got that way, you can be sure that they were sowing, some sort of a service to help other people, to give them something they needed. And as a result of that sowing, they reaped back rewards for it. And so we look at them as kind of being great. And so Jesus said, the greatest among you will be your servant. So sometimes we have to prepare to serve. The farmer who's going to go out and going to sow some seed in his field, he has to go out and make sure he's got gas in his tractor. He's got the seed in the seeder. And he's got to do a little preparation. You know, you don't just go out and sow. You got to sometimes prepare to sow. And then you go out and you sow and you reap the rewards. Let's turn the page and think about this. Acres of diamonds in the miracle of the mind. A man named, some of you may have heard of him, Earl Nightingale, tells this account in his book, Lead the Field. An account of an African farmer heard tells of other African farmers who had made millions by discovering diamond mines. And he got so excited that he sold his farm and went out and decided that he was going to search for and find, see if he could find some diamond mines of his own. And so he spent his whole life out looking and searching, and he never found any. This is a true story. And he winds up, they say, some say that he drowned, perhaps deliberately, in the river. He was so frustrated with the fact that he could not find what he was looking for. Well, this story tells of a man who went around and telling this story that I'm fixing to tell you, and the lessons that were to be learned in it, And what he was doing was he was raising money to build a university. And so he would go around and give these lectures and tell them this story. And people were so moved by it and realized the value of it that they paid money because he was building the university, which became Temple University. And so that's what he was doing. So the moral of the story is very clear what happened here. First, so I'll tell you, he went out, the farmer sold his land, went out and was looking, and discouragement wound up dying without having gotten anything. So the moral of the story is clear. If only this farmer had studied and prepared himself to learn what a diamond looked like in its rough state. Because what was discovered as he went down, and the guy who bought the land from him went down to the river and realized that here was these shining objects in the river on his land. And, well, he picks up this one. It's unbelievable how big it is. It's beautiful. He has no idea what it is. And so he goes and he just sets it on his mantle. And a friend comes over and sees it. And he's fiddling it. He's looking at it. And pretty soon he's getting very excited. And he's going, "Do you know what you have here?" Well, obviously the guy didn't. And so he tells him that this is an uncut diamond. And it's the biggest I've ever seen. Well, as it turns out, true story, this guy that sold his farm to go look for diamonds, on his farm turned out to be the largest diamond mine in the whole continent of Africa. And he sold it for next to nothing and went looking for diamonds. So this affected so many people that heard the story. It was the idea that each of us at this moment are standing in the middle of his or her own acres of diamonds. This is what got the people so excited. They realized after hearing this story that they also had acres of diamonds. They had a gold mine. They were yet to discover it, but they knew from hearing the story it was true. It is believed that most people only use 5 to 10% of their mind. So that leaves some 90% of virgin territory unused. Thus, our minds can be compared to the undiscovered gold mine or acres of diamonds. All creation is supplied with instincts, including mankind, but animals were created to rely upon their instincts to live. They don't sit around thinking about what would it take to get the first dog or cat on the moon. Animals don't do that. They mostly just sit until they are moved by their next instinct. Interesting how many people are like that. Help me remember, where is it that the Bible says, as a dog thinks, so is he? I can't find it nowhere. Dogs have been around for thousands of years. How is it they have never evolved to thinking? I'm not promoting evolution. I hope you get that. This is satire. But the Bible does say, as a man thinks in his heart, so is he, Proverbs 23:7. Well, then that leads us to ask, what is the heart? And where do we find it? If it's in his heart that he thinks, what is this heart? Is it this organ that pumps blood through my body? No, it's not. The heart is a figure of expression to the innermost thoughts, feelings, and intentions of a person. So we have thoughts and we have inner thoughts. They're related concepts, but there is a subtle difference between them, between our thoughts and our inner thoughts. Thoughts, in a general sense, refer to the mental processes of thinking, considering and processing information. How often do we find ourselves like animals reacting to instincts without thinking? You know, you smell some food, instincts, you get up and go. You see something on the TV. So you're just reacting to instincts, but not really thinking. Thoughts, when we think about thoughts in a general sense, it refers to the mental processes of thinking, considering, and possessing information. You got to think. Inner thoughts, on the other hand, are deeper thoughts. They are often connected to one's emotions, beliefs, values, and innermost desires. They can be reflective, that is, looking outward, or they can be introspective, that is, looking inward, and reveal more about a person's true feelings and characters. These are usually more personal thoughts that are known only by you and God. This is what I believe we would identify as the soul of a person, the innermost of a man. So you see, we have our thoughts that we use for processing information, but then we've got inner thoughts where we really think and contemplate and consider and usually many of these are not shared, but God knows them. And so I think we identify the man, body, soul, and spirit, through the joints and the marrow, the discerning of the thoughts, right down to that which makes man different, makes man special from the rest of creation. Man has a soul. And the soul reveals the man, and God knows it. So, just in closing here, walking in the light of knowledge is what we've been talking about. You know, so if you're, like I said, the law of sowing and reaping, you've got to sometimes stop and think. Well, if I want some things, I want to reap some things, then you got to realize I first have got to sow some things. And we, in whatever way you serve, there's always rewards, because that's the law. That's the law of sowing and reaping. What you sow, you will reap. It will come back to you. It's the law of cause and effect. It will always happen. And we don't know how long the circle is for the boomerang comes back around, that what we sowed, now the effect comes back to us. But it will happen. In one form or another, it will always happen. And if you think back and think, whoa, this thing that just came to me, I can realize it's from something that I sowed a while back. This is the reaping of it. It could be good or bad. It could be something good because you sowed something good, or it could be something bad because you sowed something bad, but it will come back to you in one form or another. So walking in the light of knowledge, and the Bible gives us knowledge about, like, the law of sowing and reaping. The Bible is so full of wisdom and understanding. If we'll stop and think about what it's telling us, and the implications and the laws behind it by the mighty Creator Himself. So if we walk in the light of the knowledge, we'll find that it's going to be profitable not only for this life now, but the life to come. Thanks for your attention. Let's stand and we'll be dismissed.